This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Conference 2022, held at Faith Builders from August 7 to 9.
So how do we work within the system to develop practices that actually encourage a love of learning rather than a love of grades? I would like you to find, we're in tight quarters here, but I would like you to find four or five people that you could talk with and think about your last 2 weeks in the classroom and what have you done as a teacher to encourage, you can brag on yourself, to encourage a love of learning. What practices have you engaged in, and what practices, as you think about them, may have actually encouraged a love of grades rather than a love of learning within your students. So take a few moments, find a group of four or five people that you can chat with, and let's see how noisy we can get this room. May I have your attention for just a minute? I'm hearing lots of great conversations and I'm loving it. I'm hearing you focus on practices that encourage love of learning, which, you know, we love being positive. Don't rearrange too quickly. Take a few minutes right now and look for things that actually encourage love of grades, okay? Go on the negative. Be hard on yourself. I can find things that I've done in the past 6 weeks. And I've been working on this topic, you know, and I mean, there's times that I've stopped myself too, but things that I almost did, that I'm like, no, that would have encouraged a love of grades. So take a few moments and actually go on the critical there. What are you doing right now? What did you do this past week that you're like, that actually encouraged students to work for a grade, not for learning? Now, the two don't have to be competing all the time, but sometimes they are. And I want to acknowledge that they don't have to be competing, but they can be competing if we don't handle it right. So what are the negatives, or what are the practices that encourage a love of grades? Go, spend a bit of time there. I want to hear some of what you've been talking about on both sides. Let's start with the practices that encourage a love of grades. I think probably we have great stories to tell with all of our examples, and there maybe we have time for some stories, but let's just throw some of these practices out there, and then maybe some of them will be controversial and we can discuss them as well. So go.
Some kind of group reward for achieving a particular grade level.
Group rewards. How about group grades? That would be a seminar on itself. How do you grade group work? It falls into here. But yes, okay, group rewards. So like when the whole class gets 25 or 100 hundreds. I don't know. I'm a little far from this kind of practice. So, is that a thing? Like rewarding 100 hundreds, and then we celebrate that. Does it work? What works? Does it get good grades?
In the short term.
It works, okay? It works. Depends what your goal is, depends what you want to achieve, all right? Okay, what else?
Just talking about grades a lot.
Our language. This is going to be on the test. I propose that language like that encourages a love of grades rather than a love of learning.
Along with that, a big review just before the test, which I think is, I don't know.
There's good ways to handle that, and there's bad ways to handle that. I agree with you completely that even how we think about reviews, I think, is influenced by how we think about this topic. I agree.
I have certain subjects where if they read the subjects, they have to correct it before I bump it up to me. And if all I care about is they get the right answer, or do I make them explain it to me or make sure they understand what they're missing?
Yeah. And like there's part of what you said there that I think has lots of potential. I think a refusal to allow another chance for students to show proficiency, I think actually can encourage a love of grades instead of a love of learning. I think there are good reasons why practices that encourage a love of learning is an opportunity, another opportunity to show proficiency. But we have to do that in a professional way that actually requires them to show proficiency rather than just regurgitating something that they now have memorized the answer for. So I think our practices and how we require students to show proficiency when we allow them another chance, I think that's important. Good.
I think failing to comment on tests can be one thing that actually encourages a love of grades. If they just see the stark red score, the number there, it's less effective than if the teacher is actually putting in some words of, this is what I'm noticing in your learning. Keep it up here. Don't be doing this. That kind of thing.
Because now I know what that grade means, right? Mm-hmm. If all I got was the grade and I had a 88%, I'm trying to curve all my grades high because I'm talking to American teachers. if any of you know anything about grading scales, I'm like, all the students that I'm talking about today are like exceptional students. we give out A's. We're sparse with A's in Canada. I'll just say that. Anyway, so now I know what that 88 means, right? Because you've given me feedback. It wasn't just that I got 88% of the questions right. I actually know the areas that I need to continue to work on, to continue to grow in. This fall, I was returning my grade 7 and 8 students' first grammar test, and my lesson plan was to give them the test back, spend 10 minutes answering a few questions, and then go on to the next lesson. And that morning in bed, before my alarm clock rang, I was replaying that lesson plan in my head. And I had just spent my whole weekend working on this research for this. And I'm like, oh, practice what you preach. So I threw out that lesson plan, and before I gave them their test back, I actually had a conversation with them about what grades mean and what they don't mean and what this grade on their grammar test is all about. And for the record, when I give tests back, this is a grade 7 and 8 class. This is what they would see at the top of their test. Okay? They don't, I avoid putting percentages on. They can calculate the percentage. They're in grade 7 and 8. They know how. But I think this is a really, really great trick, especially for elementary students who don't know how to calculate percentages yet. Because now, instead of just seeing a percentage, they see that number and they're like, okay, I got 41 out of the 54 questions right. And I think that's actually getting them closer to thinking about what I still need to learn. All right. So I had this conversation. I told them about why they don't see percentages on my papers because they're in grade 7 and 8 and they deserve to know. And we had a conversation about that we, about, because this, you, I don't know, maybe my school's abnormal, but if I don't have this conversation with friends or with them first, they start showing their grade to the friends and asking to see their friend's grade, and it becomes this kind of internal competition about, you know, who got the best grade, and some of them are happy to show their grades to each other, and some of them are not so happy, and I just don't think it's helpful for anyone, whether they're doing well or whether they're not doing well. So we had that conversation, and then I told them that their grade is just their test grade is just an opportunity to discover what information they don't yet understand. Like, we're just starting the year. There's all kinds of time to learn this information yet and to show mastery of it, and that there'll be other grammar tests where they'll get to show that they now understand the material that they didn't understand on this test. And one of my grade 8 boys raised his hand and kind of in a sassy way, he's like, is this supposed to be motivating? But I knew, I could see it in his eyes. The class was with me. Like, they really were. And so I wasn't intimidated by him. And I looked at him and I said, well, is it? Sheepishly. I mean, I actually got more than just a nod. I got a yes. It was a sheepish one, but it was a yes. And I don't often fist pump as I'm leaving a class, but there was certainly a mental fist pump that day when I left my class. And then what I had them do is when they got their test back, they had to, from each section, they had to take one of the ones that they got wrong. And they had to find the rule in their grammar book, and they had to write the rule on the test that they had misapplied. If they got everything right, they got to write the rule of one of them that they applied correctly, okay? Because you want everyone engaged, all right? And even the ones that got everything right sometimes don't even know why they got it right, so it's helpful for them too. Let's be honest, okay? And I have a class of, it was 26 grade 7 and 8 students with their grammar tests that were fully engaged for the next 15, 20 minutes finding the rules from their grammar books that they hadn't applied. And I was delighted. Did we move on to the next lesson that day? No, we did not. Was it a worthwhile time well spent? Absolutely. All right. So, yes. Which one did that? Who said something that wow. Comments on test? Was that what that spun out of? Sorry about that detour. I had to tell you what my is that supposed to be motivating story, because that was my laugh for the day. What else? Are there other classroom practices that we should evaluate? Then we're going to move very quickly on to things we should be doing. Nobody's grading on a curve anymore, are they? That hopefully we've left that one far behind, because I don't think that is helpful to encourage love of learning in any way, shape, or form. I think bonus points are a highly questionable activity because I think they blur the grade of what a student really knows and what they don't know. If you're going to give bonus points, give them on a quiz that doesn't really matter anyway in the grand scheme of things. You know, if you can have a little bit of fun with bonus points, you can give bonus points for wearing the color pink on Valentine's Day, you know. I mean, but that's how useful they are, right? Like, they really aren't. I think we encourage a love of grades when we reward compliance rather than achievement. So are you getting your grade for actually writing a good paper? Or are you getting a grade for turning a paper in that's formatted correctly? And I'm not saying that formatting isn't necessary, but be careful how much of your grade goes to formatting things that just require compliance and don't actually show that a student has learned the material that you're teaching. So those are the negatives. We got to hurry up. What are the positives? What are the things that we actually can do to encourage a love of learning? I think we touched on one already. I think we need to change our language, okay? This is self-convicting because I have stood in front of a class and said, I'm really happy with your grades on this test. Well, and I mean, there's a couple of problems with that. I mean, my happiness is not dependent on what students get with their grades, right? And it also, again, puts the focus on the grades. What if instead, and this is what I've really been working hard to say things like this, as a class, you've shown good understanding of most of the capitalization rules. Well, they can tell I'm happy. I let it be known by my demeanor that I'm happy. But now they know what they did well. They showed a good understanding of the capitalization rules. They learned this. And now we get to move on to the next topic because we've shown mastery of this or proficiency of it, and we can move forward. So language. Even language like, this is what I need you to do, versus this is what this assignment will teach you. It's subtle, but I think it's significant. It's not about me needing them to do this. They're not performing for me. They're not my puppets. They're students. And they are learning, and I want them to take ownership of that rather than being my puppet. Okay, so we talked about changing our language. What else do you have on the, and we also mentioned the giving opportunities for students to show proficiency or possibly, I don't necessarily like the language of retaking the test because I don't think that that's what it should be. I think it should be a different assessment, completely different assessment. But I think there are good arguments to be made for allowing students to show mastery. But that comes down to school policies too. So don't rewrite all your school policies today and go back to your, you know, discuss it. Think about why you might change some of those policies. What else are you doing to encourage a love of learning?
This didn't really come out in our group, but isn't it pretty important that we show that we love books and we love to learn and we're curious?
And we're not learning just because we're getting a good grade, right? Yeah. It's a lifelong practice, absolutely. Modeling that lifelong practice of learning, absolutely.
Process.
I think that's a great point. Why have we decided that tests are the way to show proficiency? And sometimes it's a good way to show proficiency, but it's not the only way to show proficiency and to communicate to students that they are learning, or for students to discover what they know on a topic. Sometimes there are alternative methods that are actually more useful. I think that we as teachers, one of the things that we have to do is we have to take time to interpret the data. So when we do grade a test, we have to know what that means. And if you simply, you can, as a teacher, you can grade an entire stack of tests and hand it back to the students and have no more information than you did about what the students know and don't know if you don't take the time to interpret the test and interpret the data. And so grading the test, putting the grade on the top, is just the first part of your job as a teacher. Then you have to dig through those tests. What are the questions that they're struggling with? What are the types of problems the student doesn't understand? And that means that we as teachers need to know our tests, and we need to know what we're testing, okay? And we need to know why we're asking this question. And so this all comes back to backward design and test construction, and all of that stuff becomes a part of this as well. But I think that interpreting the data is a practice that will allow us as teachers to encourage a love of learning. Which means you actually can't leave that set of tests on your desk for 2 weeks before you grade it. Mic drop. Got silent in here. I think the biggest thing that encourages the love of learning is encouraging our students to be able to evaluate themselves and to be able to evaluate their own learning. And this brings us to this idea of self-assessment and metacognition, and how do we develop this in our students. Students who love grades are not going to be good self-assessors. I have my co-teacher is trying something new this year and has some students they're trying to self-assess themselves in PE, and it's causing great inner turmoil. And bringing out some pretty significant issues, because the love of grades is in conflict with the love of truth. And so how do I do this? I can't give myself a low grade, but I know that I'm really not that great at basketball. And so how do I resolve this? And if that love of grades stays reigning supreme, then the ability to accurately assess yourself goes out the window, okay? And so we do our students a favor when we encourage practices that help them to be able to evaluate what they're learning, rather than simply loving the end goal. And this, so every day this should be happening in our classrooms. So what are some of the ways that we can, as a teacher in our classrooms, help our students to evaluate whether they're getting a concept or not? So they don't have to wait to the test to find out whether they understand it. But today in the lesson, they know, oh, I understand this now. Or, no, I don't understand this now. What are the self-assessment practices that we can use on a daily basis to encourage that metacognition, that thinking about our learning as it's happening on a daily basis? What are you doing? How do you make this happen?
I just tried something last week that worked surprisingly well. The students were supposed to write a paragraph to demonstrate they understood something. And so I had three volunteers give me theirs, and I put it under a document camera. We talked about the strengths and weaknesses of all three of those, and then the rest of the students graded their own.
Brilliant.
It was really amazing how well it worked.
So
I did it because I didn't have time to grade them myself.
but here's the thing, and we didn't even talk about this, but another practice, I think, that encourages the love of grades is actually grading everything. Sometimes you do something just for the learning experience and for the development. I think it's a trap that we get ourselves into when we actually grade everything. And so what John Mark did was absolutely brilliant. And now they know, you probably talked about it. You said this is A quality, this is level. We all have different terms for this, okay? In my world, that would be level 4. You know, this is a level 3, this is a level 2, okay? This is an A, this is a B, this is a C. Now, which does yours match up to? Self-assessment. And now they know. And it was far more effective than them getting the paper back and having an A at the top. And you saved yourself time, and they had a learning opportunity. Yes, absolutely. This needs to be the stuff we're doing every day in our classrooms, not once a term. So this is something that I do fairly often. And again, sometimes it's a survival technique because I'm teaching two grammar classes in the same room at the same time. So my grade 8 students are finished with an exercise, and they're waiting on me, and I'm not ready to check it with them. And I say, talk with your seatmate. They're sitting in pairs. Again, not because we love them sitting in pairs, because that's the only way we can get that many kids in the classroom. These things we do, and then we use it. So they're sitting in pairs. I say, talk with your partner, and if you disagree on an answer, resolve it. Who's right? You have to defend your answer. And this works super with any math. It works well with grammar. I mean, you can use your imagination where it would work. But and actually, by the time I get to them, there's maybe 3 or 4 questions that I have to answer that they weren't able to resolve between the two of them. And it was time efficient. But they actually know the exercise, know the material a lot better than if we would have just corrected it as a class. We're out of time. So much for the back page, sorry about that. Planning for change. I think this is just a good habit to take what we've learned and to make plans. So I leave that for you. You can do that, you know, when you're sleeping, because that's all the time we have for it and all the time you have for it. I know how you folks are. Let me just leave us with this. I've been thinking about this listening to Daryl's talks on humility. If humility is a strong grip on truth, and I think that was one of his definitions, that I believe that a humble approach to learning and to teaching will enable students to accurately assess themselves through their learning. And so the question I have for me, for us, is do my classroom practices enable students to accurately assess themselves and their learning? Because I think if humility is our focus and we want them to have a strong grip on truth, we want them not to love good grades, but to be able to look at themselves accurately, look at their learning accurately, and be able to assess their strengths and weaknesses and grow from there. Blessings to you in your classrooms.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769. Recordings from past events are also available at www.thedocforlearning.com.